Oh, hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. Thank you for joining me today on this podcast. Hope you are holding on okay. Excited about our guest today, Anjimale Chitambu, who uses his first name on stage, just goes by Anjimale, is a genderqueer Black singer-songwriter making his way onto a larger radar with the debut album Giver Taker. The artist appeared on some high-profile Best of 2020 lists like NPR and picked up two recent Boston Music Awards. Originally from outside Dallas, Jimmy was raised by Malawian parents. Father was a doctor and mother a computer programmer. His sisters encouraged him to join the choir and taught him harmonies at a young age. The guitar came along around age 10 or 12, and soon an affinity with the instrument began, particularly with finger picking. Moving to Boston for music in 2011, he developed a drinking problem that led to entering rehab in 2016. During treatment, Jimmy discovered that he was a trans and non-binary person. That realization led to the inspiration for many of the songs on the new record, particularly the song The Maker, which compares a redefinition of gender to one of faith. In talking about the songs, he says, "I very much link my queer identity to my spirituality." Talking to Jimmy was a pleasure, and I'm grateful how open he is about his very interesting story. In his experience with taking testosterone, he learned that he'd have to forever change the way he takes care of his voice. That rich, deep sound that you hear coming out of the young performer would no longer be taken advantage of. It was also fun to hear Jimmy talk about his playful side. He said, "I think I've always been a dumbass, and once I got sober, I was able to use those powers for good." The music reflects a more serious side that calls to mind Sufjan Stevens, a major inspiration for Jimmy, along with the music from Malawi that his parents would play in the house growing up. Keep your eye on this guy. The new album is amazing. Came out last year, Giver Taker. We'll take a listen to that song, Maker, that we were talking about, and then we will get to our conversation with Anjimale on Basic Folk.
I live in my own home. I live in my paper. The absence becomes me. A reticent specter. Oh, why don't you do as you're told? Oh, happiness isn't your goal. I'm not just a boy, I'm a man. I'm not just a man, I'm a god. I'm not just a god, I'm a maker.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast. It's like, it's, you know, your new record is so awesome, and I'm really excited to talk to you.
Damn, thank you.
Yeah, your parents are originally from Malawi, and they came to the U.S. in the 80s. So what do you know about, like, where they came from, where they lived, and why they came to the United States?
My mom is from a more rural area, and my dad's from the city. And they came to the U.S. kind of like the American dream style situation for, like, more opportunities. And my dad went to medical school in Malawi, and my mom, you know, wanted to do, like, computer programming and stuff, and there just weren't as many opportunities for, I think, advancement in that regard in Malawi. And I think they were just kind of like, fuck it, we out.
Right. What kind of doctor is your dad?
So my dad is an MD / like internist. So like just your typical like checkup doctor.
PCP.
Yeah, he's a PCP for many.
Sweet. For you, what was it like to have the culture of your parents and also the culture of the U.S. in your life as a young kid?
It was definitely interesting. I'm from Texas, but I don't really feel super Texan, but I also kind of do. Like, sometimes I get a bit of, like, an accent, and I say, like, howdy mostly for like my own amusement than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And also like Y'all.
It just saves a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think Y'all is getting has gotten picked up by the mainstream at this point, which is, I hope. Well, anyway, so my parents is a, you know, they're from a completely different culture than, you know, Texas. Compared to like, quote unquote, like white American kids, like my parents were like stricter, but I don't really think that they were like particularly strict. There was just like, I remember like going to my best friend's house, and like she was like talking back to her mom and like called her mom a bitch. And I was like, that's crazy. Like that would never go down. You know, some parents are stricter than others. And I guess her parents also just like weren't.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a lot of like kind of feeling out of place, and also just kind of like, I think I approached a lot of like experiences more in like an observant fashion, just kind of like observing my parents' behavior as a kid and like observing like other American adults and kind of just like internally taking notes, I guess, as kids kind of do. So there's a lot of observation.
Junior sociologist.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Not since I was like so young that I don't remember much. I think I was like 5 or 6. We went to visit our cousins and aunts and uncles.
Did you go to the lake?
I don't know.
Isn't there like a huge lake there?
Yeah, Lake Malawi. I feel like because it's so fucking big and because Malawi's so small, I feel like we had to have.
Right. You can't avoid it.
But I just remember like mosquitoes. I like really don't. I wish I remembered more as I get older.
So it's pretty wild, the origin of your name and Jimily.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to tell that story and also talk about the evolution of your relationship to your name.
Yeah, you know, it is pretty buck wild. So what had happened was, okay, one time in like the 3rd or 4th grade, I had an assignment in like my like English class or whatever. And it was like finding out about your history, like find out what your name means, like where your parents are from, like blah, blah, blah. You know, like cute little kids project. So I like go home and I'm like, hey, like, what does Aunt Jimily mean? My mom's like, it means denied a boy because when you were born, we wanted a son, but then you weren't. And my sister Grace, when you were born, exclaimed, oh, Aunt Jimily, which means like, oh, denied. And then she proceeded to like cackle because and her and my dad started cracking up. And I was like, what the fuck? So I was like super pissed. I was not super happy about that. I was like, what the hell? And I just remember them like later retracting that. Be like, no, we were just kidding. And I was like, bullshit, I brought that to school. So yeah, that's what my name means. And I remember being like not super jazzed. I was like, that's not funny at all. In retrospect, as an adult, I do think that story is kind of funny. Like, I used to be like, okay, my name means denied, whatever. And then as I got older and like queerer, I was like, oh shit, this kind of has like a bigger meaning. So when I was like 17, 18, I was like, I'm like definitely lesbian, and like that's kind of denied a boy, kind of, because I'm like kind of a butch lesbian at this point. So I was kind of like, haha, joke's on them. And then that's how I used to tell that story to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was like 23, 24, I was like, hold up, I'm definitely trans. So the joke is hella on them because I'm trans mask. So yeah, the older I get, the more wild that story of my name becomes. And it's like, it's just, there's like some real weird cosmic, like, I don't want to say irony, maybe karma. I don't know. There's something going on with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. I'm interested about your parents, like, what you might have in common with them and what kind of parents were they. Like, I read about Saturday morning cleanings, your mom running around the house clapping at people to get up. But like, what kind of parents were they, and how do you think that you're like them?
Well, my parents, they were, and I think are, like, good parents. They're like very loving. They're very imperfect and like very wise, and they're also hilarious. And the older I get, like, the funnier I think that they are.
Yeah.
They're just like, which I think is a fun part of adulthood, is like realizing how, like, if your parents are lit, big if, big if, realizing that they are lit and being like, oh shit, that's so, that's, you're actually mad funny.
Who's funnier, your mom or your dad?
Oh, I think it's a dead tie. They have different senses of humor because my dad has like kind of a dry sense of humor and he's like kind of quiet and then he'll just say some shit. And I'm like, what the fuck? And my mom is like mad loud and corny, but she also tells like really hilarious, like bombastic stories. So they both tell like, they do storytelling jokes, which like, do people still do that?
Does it take like 10 minutes to get this joke out?
Yeah. And I'm always just like, why did you tell me this? But then I'm also like, that's actually funny as fuck. So yeah, I think I got my humor from them for sure. And my love of music. They love music. They've got a bunch of, or at least they did in the last like 5 years or so, still have a bunch of like old vinyl records in the garage. They've got a bunch of CDs and they were just always playing music. And so we were always listening to music, which was awesome.
Do they have a good system?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember my dad bragging about that as a kid. He's like a tech dad, but like a bumbling tech dad. So he's like...
adorable.
But like, you know, a competent, but somewhat bumbling tech dad. So yeah.
Your sisters inspired you to join the choir, and one of your sisters taught you harmonies. What was it like for you to like sing with the choir? What made it special? And what about the act of like singing with a group did you enjoy?
Oh, I think the effect that music has on me is like one of like euphoria. And that like anytime I hear a song I really like for the first time, it's just like such an incredible feeling. And I was just always really like moved emotionally and like physically, like chills by like vocal harmonies. I just always felt very like that there was something powerful contained therein, and like this collective of humans like working together to create this like beautiful sound. Mind you, I'm talking about like middle school choirs, like, but I was like, wow, this is incredible. And then my sister taught me like the alto part to Heart and Soul, which she was like learning for school. And I think I was like pretty young. Like I might have like just started school. And I was like, all right, let's do this. I like love school. And she like taught me the part and then we sang it together. And she was like, that's harmony. And I was like, no fucking way. And I just thought it was really cool. And like, there's just something very beautiful to me about vocal harmonies that I just can't get enough of.
And what about the guitar? You started playing around 10 or 12 and had a hard time at first, but then were able to figure out how to play it like finger picking style. And it seems like from what I've read, like you bring your guitar with you everywhere. What is your connection and relationship like with the instrument?
Yeah, you know, I do bring my guitars everywhere. I think I started playing because I just thought guitars were cool. I saw Prince played guitar and I was like, that's super cool. And I also liked that it was an instrument that you could harmonize on, unlike like a woodwind or some shit. I really love how I feel like they're just like little harps. That you can just, I feel like there's a close link to me between vocal harmonies and like guitar chords. And so I like the interplay between the two. And I really like that, like, when I was growing up, I could accompany myself on guitar. So then I could like, I needed to play an instrument that I could also sing while playing, which once again, like, ruled out like saxophone and shit like that. And it was kind of just like the moment I like picked it up, like, actually got to play it, I was like, this is super sick. And I was also, like, into, like, MTV and, like, Franz Ferdinand, I think, at the time. And I was just like, I want to play guitar like these people play guitar. Like, it sounds cool. I want to do that.
Your experience coming out as a lesbian when you're a teenager sounds like it was not great, like, in terms of support from those around you. But yeah. I'm wondering, like, given that you have since come out as trans mask, how did you feel about like revealing that about you, like in terms of like when LGBTQ plus people come out, there's often this like sense of relief, but what was there for you?
Yeah, the first time I came out, it kind of sucked. I mean, my friends were like, yeah, dude, we know. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And it was kind of so casual that I came out to my parents really casually, which was a big mistake. And so that experience was, like, just sucked. The fallout from that was, like, a rift between my parents and I for, like, years and years. And so, like, when I realized I was trans, I was kind of like, son of a bitch. I was like, a part of me was like, hell yeah, like, this is great. But then, like, when I would think about the fact that I would eventually need to come out to my parents, I was like, not again with this shit. So it was like a whole fucking thing. And I actually came out to them pretty recently. It was like a couple months ago. I like wrote a letter. I didn't really tell them a lot about the record or the record deal or like any of that stuff. But I was like, I think I should probably come out to them before this record comes out so they don't like read it, you know, in like Rolling Stone or some shit. So that I did. And it actually went really well.
Gosh, I would never want to have to come out twice.
It was a real pain. And I was like, man, I did this 10. It was 10 years ago that I came out as a lesbian. And I was like, damn, am I going to come out 10 years from now? What else is there left? I'm right. Sure there's so much more.
What else will your name reveal to you?
Right.
One thing I'm curious to hear more about is your love of punk music. Like, what drew you to it and how do you think it impacted you at the time and how you feel about it now?
Oh, boy. All right. So what had happened was I was really into Blink-182 in middle school. I, like, remember I even, like, played a little concert for my parents at one point after they got me, like, a mic and a mic stand. I, like, made them listen
hey guys,
to me.
Check this out.
Yeah, it was, like, a half
hour concert.
Check
out these
amazing
songs.
Exactly. And they just, like, sat there, which in retrospect is hilarious and also really sweet. But I was, like, playing them the Blink-182 discography. So in my guitar learnings, I realized that, like, Blink-182 songs are, like, all the same chords. And for some reason, that, like, really upset me, and I felt, like, betrayed. I was like, how could this be? And so I was like, I can't listen to this anymore. I'm tired of this pop punk. I'm ready to move on to punk. And so this was also around the time I started, like, skateboarding, and I used to go on a skating message board, and, like, there was a music section, and people, like, talked about music, and I started delving into the history of music genres that I was interested in. And so I did a deep dive into punk. I remember being like, okay, like, what is actual punk? Like, what is that technically? And the internet was like, Dead Kennedys, like Circle Jerks. And I was like, sick. And so I just started like listening to all these fucking punk bands, like Leftover Crack and Black Flag. And like, there was just so much, and like early AFI. I just kept digging and digging like back in time. And then I started listening to, like, classic pop punk, which was, in my opinion, still a harder core punk than, like, modern pop punk. I also had, like, a lot of semantic issues with, like, genre labels, and I thought I was, like, the most hardcore 14-year-old, basically, because of my alternative music taste. And I was like, man, everybody is a poser except for me.
Right. That's how it works.
And, like, yeah, so I listened to punk a lot, and I have different feelings about punk now, like, as I've come to, like, age and realize how, like, white and man-dominated it is. Like, that's not super cool, and so I'm less interested, but there's still, like, I actually still do regularly listen to a bunch of hardcore punk, but I think it kind of facilitated my, like, teenage rebellion, which for me was mostly, as an early teen, just, like, kind of wearing wristbands, but I thought it was really rebellious to do so. Like, yeah. A wallet chain. I was like, look at me go.
Yeah. I used to put lipstick on my eyelids and call myself goth. So
nice.
Do whatever you need to do to get through high school.
Well said.
You moved to Boston in 2011 for school.
Yeah.
How'd that go? What was that move like?
You know, in retrospect, it was pretty flippant. I was like, I need to get the fuck up out of Texas. So I just applied to Boston schools. And one of my favorite ska punk bands at the time, Big D and the Kids Table, is from Boston. And they had just come out with this record talking about how awesome Boston was. And I was like, fuck it. I'm out of here. And I got into Northeastern and like, I went up for orientation with my mom. And I was like, cool, looks good. And then like 2 months later, I like packed up all my shit and moved there.
Wow.
I was like, shit, cool. I like... was like dragging all of my bags to the dorm from the cab. Like, I just had so much shit. I like shipped my guitar because I was afraid they wouldn't like gate check it, which they do.
Oh, right.
That's
smart.
I was like, this guitar needs to get there. So I, like, paid a bunch of money to ship that. And, like, I just kind of relatively flippantly was like, okay, I live in Boston now.
How do you approach, like, big decisions like that generally? Is it kind of like a quick decision for you, or do you like to mull things over?
As an adult, I would not do that like that again. I think it just happens to be a matter of luck that everything turned out super chill up here, because I did not do a ton of research. I was like, my favorite band is from Boston. I'm going to Boston. Like, there, I didn't tell my parents that. And so I did have other reasons that I said that probably sounded pragmatic, but were less important to me than the fact that my favorite band was from that. Because my parents are super, like, pragmatic. They wouldn't just be like, oh, your favorite band is from Boston? See ya. Like, they would of need, course. Like...
yeah.
So I'm sure I told them some shit that made sense, but now I would never do that. I would, like, you know, look up the demographics, like, look up what the communities are like.
Right.
I wouldn't just pack up and bounce.
Man, I love a quick decision, though. That makes me excited to hear about that. But yeah, also totally respect the fact that, like, you should research about... That was really irresponsible of you, Jimmy. So in 2016, is that when you checked into rehab?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You, like, again, you have a lot of great quotes from your interviews. And one of them, you said, I had a lot of shame and guilt that created an emotional, psychological and spiritual block, but also a creative block. So you left town, you went to Florida.
Yeah.
What was your attitude going into rehab, and how did that change over the course of the experience?
Yeah, my attitude was pretty like, I need help real bad. And like, I had been hospitalized several times that year before that last stint, but for the grace of God, I was like, actually, like, the last time I was hospitalized, I was just totally, like, depleted. I was like, damn, I really don't have anything left to go here with this. Like, I felt bad enough to stop. And, yeah, like, gladly, the kids call it rock bottom. And I hit that later in that, like, in that experience. One of my, like, therapists was like, you have the gift of desperation. And I was like, fuck you, man. What the fuck? But now I'm like, okay, yeah, because without that, for me, like, without that desperation or rock bottomness, I wouldn't have discontinued, like, abusing drugs and alcohol. I would have continued to do that. So by the time I got to rehab, they were like, hey, you know, do you want to go to psych? And I was like, yes, take me to this specific psych hospital. Don't take me to that one or that one. Take me to this one.
Because you researched.
Because I had been, by that point, to, like, many in the local area. Okay. And I was like, this one sucks. I don't want to go back there. Take me to the fucking nice one. And so they took me to the fucking nice one, and the doctors there were like, basically, after that point, at any time any doctors asked me or suggested anything that might help me, I was like, okay. Because I was like, I had been, like, running the show at that point for, like, many years. And I had, like, run the show into the ground. And I was like, I don't think I have good ideas. And I, like, realized that. And I was like, so, and I also clearly don't know how to and can't help myself right now. So I'm going to defer to, like, medical and mental health professionals. And so that's what I did.
Wow, wow. Was it during treatment that you realized that you were trans?
It was before treatment. And it was actually, like, during treatment, I didn't, like, disclose that because I had had, experiences disclosing that in the recent past that just did not go well. And I was like, and where it kind of felt like barriers to, like, entry. So I was like, I don't really feel like revealing this information and then getting, like, hella misgendered or, like, people asking me weird fucking invasive questions.
Right.
And so, like,
I'm doing right now.
Oh, no, I don't
I'm
think
just
this,
kidding.
No, not at all. People be asking real, like, you'd be surprised how fucking weird people are, especially doctors. But anyway, I just didn't disclose that. And I was like, yeah, I'm a girl, whatever. And, like, and also the halfway houses that I later went to were gendered and, like, are all gendered except for, like, a very small minority. So I was just kind of like, it's weird to say, but I kind of just, like, put my transness on the back burner because I was like, okay, this definitely sucks and is whack. But also I am dying and I'm going to focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah, and it is a situation where you kind of have to, when you have something like that, you have to kind of like read the room about like making a decision as to whether or not this is going to be a good idea to tell people.
Yeah. You know?
Wow. Okay, so the songs on the record, it sounds like most of them were written before you came out as trans or before you realized you were trans?
Let me see. I think definitely, I would say like half or less.
Writing songs for you before you made the realization and before you came out as trans, like how has that process changed for you after you have this new freedom of clarity and clarity of identity?
So I honestly think before I kind of was trans, realized I was trans, felt comfortable identifying as trans, my songwriting was less like serious, I think. I used to write like songs about girls and about like mostly girls. Yeah. And like kind of teenage concerns. Like I would write about songs about books I liked. It wasn't really super deep or anything, you know?
Kind of seemed like maybe aimless.
Yeah. Or just like mostly just love songs and not any self-reflexivity going on, which I just hadn't ever considered, you know, to include. Mm. And then when I came out as trans, this like more or less coincided with like my sobriety and recovery. And like as soon as I left Florida, I was like back to being trans, like just telling people I was trans because I was back in Boston in like a safer space where I could do that. Mm-hmm. And like with my return post rehab, my capacity and propensity for emotional reflection had just improved tenfold, mostly thanks to a fuck ton of therapy. And before that incredible amount of therapy, I had like been going to weekly therapy for a couple of years. But before that, I wasn't really emotionally intelligent at all. I didn't like understand how to deal with painful emotions or how to accept painful emotions or how to live through painful emotions in like a non-reactionary and or antagonistic to others way, which is like really unhealthy. And so all of that kind of was addressed to the max in rehab and, you know, continues to this day. And like I'm a more mature adult, but my songwriting just got, I think, more honest and more meaningful because I wasn't writing just because I was like kind of bored and looking for something to do. It changed to me writing because I was having an emotional experience that I needed to record and put down on paper to help me with my processing and self-soothing.
The song The Maker, which, whoo, I don't know how you wrote that, man.
What? Me neither.
Yeah, from what I understand, yeah, there's that. It's a great song, incredible. It compares a redefinition of gender to one of faith. And in talking about the song, you said, I very much link my queer identity to my spirituality. Can you expand more on that and how you came to that conclusion?
Yeah, I think that that's something that has made itself more apparent to me, like, post-rehab, which it really freaks me out that I wrote that song, honestly. But so when I was in rehab, I developed a sense of spirituality. Like, it was suggested to me that that could help me with my sobriety. And I was like, okay, I'll take these suggestions. And so I kind of developed, like, a Colors of the Wind style spirituality to, like, you know, hold on to and, like, turn to for
like the
support.
Disney song?
Yes. Yes. Precisely. Yes.
Classic.
And so that was then like a safe inner space that I created and like is now a space where I like, you know, meditate and still engage in like Colors of the Wind style hippie bullshit. And so after rehab, I was back in Boston. And in addition to just being super glad to not be in Florida anymore, there was like a big breath of fresh air. I was like, finally, I can be trans here. And it was like such a huge wave of just like, oh my God, every like my friends know my pronouns, like my real ones. And like, I can actually be myself here now, like completely and also soberly, which is super great for myself and everybody else involved. And so that felt like a huge upheaval in the same way my like, I guess like I'll call it spiritual awakening in rehab felt like a huge upheaval And I kind of realized that, like, the feeling of freedom and joy that I get when I, like, have, like, a good meditation session or, like, have a nice, like, walk outside in the sun is the same sense of freedom and joy I get when I, like, think about my queerness or when I experience, like, queer euphoria and realize that I'm, like, free, which is not something that I was as a teen or even in, like, you know, rehab, unfortunately, when all this dope stuff was happening. I was still, like, kind of trapped in a way. And so I feel like I feel free, and that feels like a spiritual experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's lovely. Your voice is so central to your sound and has actually experienced its own kind of change, spiritual change. and due to, like, testosterone you were taking when transitioning, how did you react to your changing voice? And how does it feel to sing now versus before?
Yeah, so my first reaction was like, oh, shit, in every sense of the word. Because I was like, woohoo, like, yay, like, now my voice kind of, like, matches more of how I feel on the inside in terms of my gender expression and identity.
Is that your speaking voice or your singing voice?
Both.
Both.
I was like, sweet, my voice is lower. That's super cool. And I was also like, oh, my God, my voice is lower. Shit, because it had a huge and profound impact on my singing voice that I knew was going to happen and wanted to happen, but was still, like, really frightening and stressful. Because, like, I basically had to, like, relearn how to sing, and I was pretty salty about it. Like, I was quite salty, and it was, like, upsetting to recognize that I had, like, I remember I played a show in my buddy's apartment, and I sang, like, a Radiohead song. I forget. Oh, yeah. I sang, like, Nude. And I was like, I know that this is the last time that I will ever be able to sing this like this, because I won't ever be able to sing this high again. And if I can, it won't sound like this. And so there was definitely a mourning that occurred when I, like, lost my upper register. And, you know, I used to, like, sing in the choir, and I was, like, a second soprano alto, which is, like, you know, lowish, highish. My voice was just way higher, and I was used to singing in a specific way, and I felt that I had a level of vocal mastery due to, like, years and years and years of choral training and vocal training in school. And I just remember a couple of weeks after starting testosterone, like, opening my mouth to sing, and a different note would come out than the one that I had was planning on coming out. And I was like, what the fuck? I always have control over this. I don't have control over this. So there was, like, a loss of control that I was, like, that took a lot of, you know, reckoning with, and, like, a lot of gentleness. So, you know, yeah, I asked YouTube what to do, and they were like, just keep singing and you'll learn how to control your new voice.
Were there YouTube videos on what to do if your voice is changing from T?
Yeah, there's, like, a very large amount. And, like, my roommate at the time was on T as well. So I had, like, done a bit of research, and I was like, I know this is going to change. I just want to know, like, if I will be able to sing at all once I'm on T. Because I wasn't sure about it. I was like, it'll probably be fine. And it's like a huge subgenre of, like, YouTube is, like, transitioning. And there's like videos of guys on T, like, harmonizing with their older voice. There's, like, a bunch of shit. It's pretty cool. But they were all like, just keep singing. And I was like, okay. And I was like, I definitely have enough, like, experience in choirs to be able to, like, safely approach singing. And so I'm going to do that. And in order for me to do that, I need to be really gentle with my voice and not push it and keep singing. So that was the deal.
How has that experience changed the way you might think about care for your voice as you get older?
Well, I think my voice is so much more fragile than it used to be, but also more powerful, which is interesting. And so just because of the stress on my vocal cords from, like, them thickening or whatever, I know that I need to take care of my voice in a way that I wouldn't have really thought about before. Mm. Like, I warm up before I sing always, and I, like, some days I can sing higher than others, and I, like, I don't push my higher register because I don't want to, like, break anything, you know?
Yeah, don't break anything.
I don't want to break anything. The fragility of this instrument has been made very clear to me as a result of testosterone.
Well, yeah, I hope that leads to some good, like, longevity for you.
Yeah, I think it'll be super chill, especially, like, I now have a lower register that didn't exist, and it just keeps getting, like, lower and wider. And so I feel like what will likely happen is my, you know, upper register will decrease with age, but my lower register will, like, continue thickening out. So I feel like it'll be cool.
Yeah. In your sobriety, you developed a keen sense of spirituality and self-worth, which, like, awesome. You grew up going to a church that you didn't connect with, Presbyterian. But what aspects of that foundation of faith play into the spiritual for you? And also, how do you see your relation to faith working its way into your music?
Because I think I was too young to understand what the fuck was going on in church. And there were also really long services. And I was like, I'm five. And I've been here for 500 years. And I had to wake up at like 6 a.m. I was like, this, I don't even know what's going on.
And you were awoken on Saturday to clapping.
Yeah.
Hard. Not a relaxing weekend.
Yeah, my mom is a freak of nature. But I think that the best, my best like introduction to faith and spirituality in a positive way was like through the good qualities that my parents have. Like their like wisdom and like kindness and love and like general good-heartedness. I feel like those things are like kind of like the basics of all faiths. And if you can kind of do those right, you're doing pretty good, I guess. And so those I like took with me, and everything else I was kind of like, y'all can keep that. I don't really understand all that. But this, I'm still figuring out what spirituality means to me, you know, on a daily basis. It's kind of exciting. There's like a sense for me of like adventure and uncovering like the mysteries of like the universe or whatever. I watch a lot of Neil deGrasse Tyson, but I think that like my love of like exploration and just like learning new things that comes across in my spirituality, which then comes across in my music. Like I have a lot of questions, a lot of thoughts, a lot of conclusions, and so I write them down and then I sing them.
You've overcome a lot of shame in your life.
Yeah.
Which, man, shame is hard. When it hits you, it's like a hot knife. What is your current relationship to shame?
That's a fantastic question. Something I have been learning over the years is just the concept of being gentle with myself keeps beating me over the head gently. And so I kind of have like a defense against shame these days, which is like self-compassion. So like my shame receptors are kind of now like couched in this cushion, I guess, of self-compassion, which is really helpful because it's fucking hard out here. I mean, it's a fucking pandemic. And there's just, you know, even without that, there's so much to experience shame for in life. Some warranted, some like unwarranted. And like, I just try to couch it in compassion. Like, for example, like this week, you know, has fucking sucked. And, like, I've just been feeling bad that I feel bad. And so, like, there's that shame of, like, oh, I should be, like, doing more. Or, like, I should be, like, using social media to, like, I don't know, rally the people or something. Which I'm not doing. I'm taking a break because I don't have anything to, I don't have anything to say. Except for fuck's sake. And so there's, like, my self-compassion that kicks in that's, like, hey, you know, that's real. And also, this week fucking sucks. And, you know, you're doing the best you can. You know, you're brushing your teeth. You're cleaning your room. You're going outside. Like, some weeks are easier than others. Sometimes I have more energy than other times. And this week I'm kind of drained. So I'm like, I'm able to recognize when I'm like working with like less. Like if I'm working with less spoons, I guess, then I'm going to do less. And when I have more energy, I try to do more. And I try to like counter my shame with like some compassion, some reason. I'm like a pretty, I do a lot of talking to myself, basically.
The song Your Tree kind of refers to your family tree, which means a lot to you. And for you, it wasn't always guaranteed that you'd be part of your family as a queer and trans person in a conservative house.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of LGBTQ plus kids deal with, and it can be very scary to reckon with that fact, to lose your family over who you are. How much did that impact your decision to live your truth and be honest with your family about who you are?
Honestly, not as much as I would hope that it would. Like, I came out to my siblings and that was pretty easy, but like if it hadn't been for the record release, I probably would have put off coming out to my parents. I feel like my desire to connect with my family, there's also a converse like feeling of like defiance that I should just get to be who I get to be without like explanation and without like having to make it a big fucking thing. So there's also a level of frustration there that isn't like anybody's fault, but rather just like the way that it is. Being a part of my like family tree, honestly, the older I get, the less important it is to me. But then like I came out to my parents and like my dad was just so sweet, and it kind of has now shifted that belief system again, where I'm like, maybe my family's not so bad.
Or that's
like,
great.
You know, maybe there are things worth keeping, worth saving, worth uplifting in this very complicated family tree.
You have a very playful side of your personality. First of all, it's super fun to talk to you. We've been talking for an hour and it's very fun. You call yourself a boy king, and also these are just some examples of your playfulness. And during interviews, sometimes you describe being happy as like heart eyes emoji. Instead of saying like, I was super happy, you would say like, I was heart eyes emoji. And you kind of just like give off this like silly fun bro vibe.
Oh God.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
But I know what you're talking about.
How did you cultivate that side of yourself?
Well, I think I've always been a dumbass. And I think that, you know, once I got sober, I was able to use those powers for good. And I don't know, I've always just kind of been a bit of a dumbass. I like, you know, joking with my buds. My family is very, like, one of the ways we show love is just by making fun of each other. And so I kind of just like fucking with people. And in, like, a nice way. When I was, like, a teen, I used to, like, fuck with people in, like, a not nice way. Like, which is not cool. And so as I get older, I just, like, become more of a dad, basically. Mm. And I like the prospect of injecting silliness into a conversation and kind of just seeing how far that can go before the other person's like, wait, what the fuck? But in like a nice way.
Right. Because maybe you're so kind to yourself that your silliness is now kind to others.
Yeah. I mean, I spend, you know.
Bingo.
Yeah, exactly. Boom. Yes.
All right, Jimmy, you want to do the lightning round?
Yeah. Is it
okay.
Like for real lightning?
No, it's just like fun question time.
Sick.
All right, here we go. What was the first song you learned on the guitar?
Oh, shit. Yeah, it was Smoke on the Water, I think.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Dogs or cats or something else?
Dogs. I love cats, though.
What is your coffee order?
Black coffee, ice.
What is your favorite country?
My favorite country?
Yeah.
Can I say none?
Sure. Acceptable. First celebrity crush?
Lance Bass?
Who is the nicest musician you've ever met?
Yo-Yo Ma.
Oh, yeah.
He's so nice.
I bet he's super nice. What was the first album you bought with your own money?
Blink-182, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket.
What was your first concert?
First real concert was I saw Brand New at some place in Dallas.
What was the last book you read?
Last book I read? I guess it was The Faceless Old Woman Who Secretly Lives in Your Home from Welcome to Night Vale.
Whoa. All right. Flying or invisibility?
Flying.
Star Trek or Star Wars?
Star Trek.
Where is the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
Baldface Mountain in New Hampshire. Up at the top.
Sweet.
Yeah.
New Hampshire had a lot to do with this new record, right?
It did. We recorded there, but...
Cool. All right, that's the lightning round, Jimmy. You have done it.
Sick.
Very good answers, very quick. You were like lightning.
Okay, I was trying to be as lightning adjacent as possible, so thank you.
Right, sweet. Well, congrats on the new record. It was so fun talking to you, and hope to meet you in person one day.
For sure. Thank you for your time.
Basic Folk This Week was produced by John Nungesser. Our business manager is Lindsay Myers. Laura McCarthy is our social media manager. Our music is by Alex Stanton of the band Townspeople. Basic Folk is part of the American Songwriter Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes at my website, cindyhouse.net, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And rate and review and subscribe and take care of each other and call your mom. And I'll talk to you next time. Okay, bye.